Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. The new Democratic Party of Canada will select its next leader at the Winnipeg Convention in March next year. As of now, there are 5 officially approved candidates seeking the leadership of Canada's NDP. They are Rob Ashton, Tennille Johnson, Avi Lewis, Heather McPherson, and Tony McQuail. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble editor Nick Seabrook and publisher Sarah Sahagian sit down to discuss the federal NDP leadership race. The two weigh in on the insiders and outsiders of the race, the concept of political purity tests, and the importance of English-French bilingualism for a federal leader. Here is that conversation. Take a listen.
Sarah, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, I thought it was a very good time to check in. It's been a few weeks, if not a couple of months, since our last conversation. And things have really picked up in the news, especially for progressives. It's a very busy time. There are major strikes happening across the country. And of course, there is the NDP leadership race, which has really picked up a lot of steam over the past few weeks. In the race right now, we have, I believe, 5 official candidates. One candidate who I'd say is a significant candidate who's unofficial, that would be Eve Engler. The other candidates in the race so far are Avi Lewis, Rob Ashton, Heather McPherson, Tony Quayle, and a councillor from Vancouver, Tennille Johnston, Campbell River City Councillor. So those are the main candidates in the race so far. And of course, Eve Engler has yet to enter the race, but he's very active in his campaign. So I just wanted to get your thoughts so far on what you think, how the NDP leadership race is going.
Well, it's nice to see that there are 5 candidates in the race. I mean, there might be more at some point. I know that they have increased the minimum amount that candidates need to raise, which has been quite controversial. Some people have suggested it's a form of gatekeeping. But on a practical note, it's hard to know where I stand with this. Fundraising is important, and the NDP needs to do a lot of fundraising. So if they want to regain official party status and maybe even become the official opposition and work towards potentially even one day being in government, they are going to need to raise money. So it's an interesting turning point for the NDP, where I think a lot of the values that this party has had, the strong values about accessibility, which are so important, and inclusion, which I definitely agree are important, a lot of them are now coming into conflict with practical concerns like the need to regain ground. And I also would like to see the NDP regain seats. So I keep feeling very conflicted about this race. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I think one thing that is going to characterize this race is just that it is definitely going to be a marathon and not a sprint. The party, for reasons known only to itself, has decided that this will be a lengthy campaign. It started Labor Day weekend, and it will continue until the last week of March at the NDP convention in Winnipeg. So that is a significant amount of time. They say, you know, 6 weeks is an eternity in politics. So what is, you know, 6 months? So it's a long time, and quite a lot can happen. I think early on right now, the race is at most being characterized by who's getting in it and how they are trying to position themselves to the party in not necessarily in the pecking order, but in the minds. And they want to stake out a claim as to where they are on the party spectrum. Are they an insider? Are they an outsider? And we've seen a few platforms come up with some ideas so far. But again, with this much time in the race, it's very early days. I guess to overview some of those candidates, of course, have Avi Lewis. He's sort of outlined some of his platform. He's interested in creating essentially, I think, a public option for food, for groceries, wholesale kind of foods. As well, he wants a tax on the wealthy. He wants to expand healthcare coverage to include mental health care, things of that nature. Of course, Lewis, a longtime name within the party, he's ran a couple of times for the NDP for a seat unsuccessfully as recently as this past election in April. His grandfather was a founder of the NDP, a leader in the 1970s. His father was a leader of the Ontario NDP. So you'd think that, you know, maybe he's the insider in this race. Some people are trying to classify him as an insider, but he, I think, is also trying to stake out that ground of being an outsider compared to our next candidate, Heather McPherson. Of course, MPP for two terms now, I believe, the Edmonton Strathcona riding. Not much in terms of what Heather's platform is yet, but, you know, obviously being a sitting MP, one of the seven, other candidates are trying to peg Heather into that role of the mainstream. This is the party establishment. This is more of the same.
The front runner.
For the front runner for the insiders. And then the last major candidate I wanted to talk about, who's officially in the race, is, of course, Rob Ashton, who is the leader, the president of the International Longshore and Warehouse Workers Union, led his union through some significant strikes in 2023, a long strike. He was reelected narrowly with 50% of the vote. I think it was in 2024, again, to the presidency of ILWU. And a lot of excitement around him. Never ran for the NDP before. Definitely, I think, is staked out the best claim to being a party outsider in this race. And there's people in the grassroots who are looking for a change who are very excited about Rob Ashton. We have a op-ed by James Adair, the president of the University of Ottawa Young NDP Association, who wrote a very favorable op-ed for Ashton. What are your thoughts on these candidates? Who do you think is the insider? Who do you think is the outsider?
Okay, so I am hesitant ever to call a woman an insider because the NDP hasn't had a female leader in about two decades, and women in politics always face such backlash. I mean, lest we forget, Chrystia Freeland was seen as the front runner when she launched her campaign to be the new Liberal leader and received about 8% of the votes and was replaced by a guy who'd never, ever served public office, right? So I feel like as much as Heather McPherson is, I'm going to the most traditionally qualified. I think that's how we can say it, because there are various different qualifications to be in politics. And I don't want to dismiss Ashton's qualifications at all, but she is the most traditionally qualified. And while she doesn't have a robust platform as yet, she has a record. And that is something that we can point to. And it's something the other candidates don't have. And we can see that she actually has, as an MP, done a lot of things that I think the party agrees with and some things that we desperately need as Canadians. I mean, she advocated for a framework for supporting young Canadians with ADHD, which is something that we hadn't really been discussing before she did that. She did a lot of great advocacy to try to stop coal mining in the Rocky Mountains, right? And a lot of great work in Parliament for that. So we see that she is a person with a commitment to environmentalism, with a commitment to mental health, with a commitment to serving a diverse group of people. Her riding is very diverse. Her riding in Edmonton, it's sort of the center of queer life in Edmonton, the center of theater and the arts. And she has been able to get reelected there. She actually is somebody who can win elections and can build a broad coalition of people, albeit in her riding, but she still can to support her. So I think that we should definitely recognize and appreciate that Heather McPherson is a politician who is good at politics. And that might be what the NDP needs right now, somebody with a record who can prove that they can do the work in Parliament, but also can get to Parliament. And then somebody like Ashton is very interesting. And I actually think that the NDP would do well to recruit more people like him to run for office. I'm wondering if after you've experienced an election where you lost official party status, the right choice might not be an outsider, but might be somebody who knows how to be in Parliament. So I actually think that Heather McPherson strategically is probably a good choice, as much as I think Ashton's interesting, and as much as I think that Avi Lewis has some really good policies. I mean, a national grocery store makes sense. I mean, just look, we have the CBC, right? That provides national media coverage. It's not without precedent to have things that are owned by the federal government. But we'll see what happens, because I don't for a second think the fact that people are calling Heather McPherson the front runner makes it true. We've seen sexism can really undermine a woman's campaign.
It was very interesting when McPherson launched her campaign. She kind of started a conversation that I think that the NDP really needed to have, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And it sort of dominated the discussion around the race for the first few weeks. And I think will come up again is this issue that she said in her launch speech about the NDP need and the base needs to do away with so-called purity tests. And they need to understand that whether someone necessarily doesn't agree with you on everything or is as passionate about an issue at the same level as you are, doesn't mean that you shouldn't open up the party and bring them in. And she really sold this as a way to grow the party and expand it, especially at a time when it saw shrinking support in the last election. It's down, like we said, to 7 seats in the House of Commons. She seemed to be making the case that the NDP has become too, I wouldn't say ivory tower-ish, but too isolated and too easy to exclude people who don't fit in with what's seen as the central ideology of the party, and that the only way for the party to grow is to expand and become more of a big tent party. And this was met by immediate reaction from other people within the party, from other elected MPs. Leah Kazan said, the MP for Winnipeg Centre, said that these so-called purity tests ensured that otherwise marginalized voices, Indigenous voices, Black voices, to LGBTQIA plus voices, that these purity tests helped make sure that these voices were heard and that they weren't excluded, and that the party didn't move in directions that would oppress these groups. And I think that other candidates, again, Eva Engler, not an official candidate yet, but he came out very strongly against these purity tests. Engler, very much known for his firebrand approach to ideology, very public with trying to hold people accountable to people who he feels are in elected office, who he feels are going against these beliefs. And I just wondered what you thought of this debate, Sarah, of the getting rid of purity tests to grow the party, to become a big tent, to achieve the goals that are central. I guess you have to have some level of purity test, or are these purity tests, does the party need to really move away from these so-called purity tests? And are they a thing that really helps make the NDP unique, helps protect marginalized voices?
So I think that this is interesting, because I will actually defend purity tests depending on what they are and how, I think you should be allowing people to evolve, but at its core, people do need to have a certain shared belief system in order to be part of a party. That's a party platform, right? I'm reminded of when Justin Trudeau came under fire for saying, if you want to be a Liberal MP, you got to be pro-choice. You don't have to choose it for yourself, but you can't oppose the fact that we are, as a party, are pro-choice. And a lot of people thought that was controversial, but that's what a party is. A party is a group of people who share a platform and share ideology. So I do think it's interesting that Heather McPherson is kind of rebranding party ideology and a party platform in some cases as a purity test. And I do think a big weakness for her is she hasn't really said what her platform is. So we don't really know what, in her mind, the difference is between a platform and a purity test. I think if she had more of a platform at this point, it could be clearer what the distinction is for her. And so I think it's hard to have this debate. But at the end of the day, there do need to be certain deal breakers. I understand where Leah Kazan feels that we need to have deal breakers that ensure marginalized voices are heard and marginalized people are protected. So I think for Heather McPherson, a big weakness for her is that she's going to have to come up with what the difference is between a purity test and a platform. And it's going to need to be coherent, and people are going to need to understand what it is. But I do think that the fact that she's talking about this, just to defend her for a second, I think what she's trying to do is say, we want to broaden our tent, as you were saying before. And so we want to get votes from people who might not necessarily have voted from us before. So it's interesting. And I feel like everything that's kind of happening right now is trying to position the NDP from McPherson's standpoint as a party that can win. And I understand why that's her motivation, because, hey, they've faced an existential crisis. But I don't know for sure strategically if the way forward is to get rid of a party platform, if that's what she means by purity test. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think I essentially agree. Like I said at the start, it's an important conversation for the NDP to have, because it makes them have to evaluate and test themselves as to what those purity tests are, what the identity of the party is, if that is what they want to stick with, and if they think that is what keeps people from joining and supporting them. And if it is, they either have to decide, do we compromise on these purity tests to expand the party, or do we change our approach and how we're selling what we believe and what our core values are? I think that is the essential conversation that's kind of happening at the core here. I think McPherson identified a real problem that the party was having, obviously, you know, that many people went to the Liberals in the last election that normally support the NDP.
Even the Conservatives, they are losing potential ground. Even to-
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that makes the Rob Ashton candidacy so interesting, just shifting to him for a moment, is that the Conservatives have been very aggressively pursuing workers, the worker vote, the unionized worker vote, and trying to become more blue collar in their approach to the Canadian electorate. And I think Rob Ashton could really completely eat their lunch there and really bring back the NDP as the unequivocally pro-union, we are where the union vote goes kind of a party. And I think that could have an interesting change to the political landscape, especially at a time when unions have become so active across the province. There are major strikes happening across the country. And I think that that could really change the nature of the political game in Canada if all of a sudden all of that union vote went to one party. That being said, just going to shift the conversation into the near future. As we're recording this, tomorrow will be the first official event of the NDP leadership race. Their Canadian Labour Congress, which is, of course, the national labour organization that helped to found the NDP back in the day, will be hosting a candidates forum in Ottawa on Wednesday, October 22nd. Obviously, the event hasn't happened yet, so we can't give you our analysis of it. But Sarah, what do you expect from this first event? It's not a debate. It's a candidates forum. And, you know, maybe this is a question that would best be suited for a political strategist. And if you can answer it, maybe that's your calling. But what do you think a candidate needs to do to succeed at this event?
That's my calling. Well, I do think that they need to sell a vision for the NDP's future. I think, in my opinion, you should be trying to show how you can regain at least official party status, but also work towards a future where the NDP gets to be in government. I would like to see the NDP thinking bigger, not just thinking, okay, how can we recover a few seats, but how can we actually have influence? How could we be official opposition? How could we maybe form the first federal government that's the NDP? I think that I will be most persuaded by whoever can really speak to that, whoever has a vision. I want to hear a vision for the party. It'll be also interesting to see how charismatic these people are, how good they are in a room, because that is part of electability, right? You need to be charismatic. I think that's going to be interesting. So it's early days, and I'm hesitant to call anyone a front runner now. I don't know. I think this is going to be fascinating. Like, these are my stories right now. As much as I care genuinely about the results, it's also just so interesting. What about you? What, give your pitch for being a political strategist. What do you think every candidate needs to do, Nick?
Yeah, well, I mean, it seems like the main strategy when these kind of debates are held on a national level in between parties, it's always, you know, whichever candidate gets away with doing the less damage to themselves while still speaking to their base and looking good and getting the sound bites. You know, I expect a little bit of that. It's a little different whenever the debate is within one party and it's multiple candidates who are inside one party, because you need the support of everybody. You don't want to create rifts within your party. You don't want to attack each other too hard. So I think it'll be collegiate. I think it'll be friendly. I think we may finally start to see some development in terms of campaign platform and policy. That I think we're going, that'll be probably the main function of this event, will be to unveil certain party platform ideas from each candidate to test how they're going to do with the audience. They have also announced today, this is fresh news, that they will be doing a debate, a French language debate in Montreal on November 27th. So that will be interesting, because the French, no one in the race right now is a native Francophone speaker. Eve Engler, who's not an official candidate yet, probably has the strongest French of anybody who might be potentially in the race. We only have a few more minutes left, but Sarah, I just wanted to get your thoughts of how important you think it is for the leader of the NDP to be fully bilingual.
Thomas Mulcair had some interesting thoughts about Heather McPherson's French. And he has, I mean, I saw him on CTV and he was acknowledging that definitely she probably has the best qualifications to be leader. But the other thing he pointed out is if you're an MP, you get the best French lessons in Canada for free at your disposal. She's had years. She was elected in 2019. She still does not feel like she really speaks French. It's one thing not to be bilingual at this point. It's another thing not to be fluent. And so I do think that that's an issue for her. And Avi Lewis, also not bilingual. I mean, none of them except for, I mean, Eve Engler, who's strongest can't French, as you pointed out. So Carl Nuremberg has written about how this is going to be a big issue. And if they want to be elected, they do need to be able to get votes in Quebec. And it doesn't seem like any of them are going to be able to campaign in a really strong way in Quebec. Having said that, Heather McPherson did say she was now making the commitment to learning French. I am not sure how well she's going to be able to do that, given that she would also be leading a party, and that's a big job too. I mean, as much as I dislike Stephen Harper, when he decided he was serious about politics, he committed his young adult life to learning French. And by the time he ran for office, he was bilingual. So it can be done. And I do share Carl's concern and Thomas Mulcair's concern about the fact that it took Heather McPherson this long to do it.
Canada has two official languages. You should be able to speak both of them if you want to lead it. And, you know, I know that some members of the NDP are kind of acknowledging, you know, most of their support is in the west of the country where French isn't a major language. But you're going to be representing the whole country. And, you know, not too long ago, the NDP had a very strong presence in Quebec under Jack Layton. And I think there is potential there. I mean, that was only 10 years ago. I think there's potential there to regrow those strongholds in Quebec that Jack Layton had won in the Orange Crush back in, I want to say, 2012. But I think you'll need strong French to do that. So I hope all candidates take that issue seriously. And that brings us to the end of our time. Sarah, thanks so much for this chat.
Thanks, Nick. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Was Rabble editor Nick Seabrook and publisher Sarah Sahagian in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Sarah and Nick. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. To do that, let's turn things back over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Back to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with national news. As I mentioned in my conversation with Sarah this week, the Canadian Labour Congress hosted an NDP Leadership Candidates Forum in Ottawa on Wednesday, October 22nd. All five candidates in the race participated in the event, which was not a debate, but instead a quick chance to get to know each candidate a little better, and for them to express some of their views on the labour movement. Filmmaker and activist Avi Lewis opened his remarks in French, and he was the only candidate to showcase his French skills at the event. Lewis spent some of his time on stage talking about his proposal for a public option for groceries and closed his remarks by saying that he felt that the time was approaching for the labor movement to engage in a general strike. Rob Ashton, president of the International Longshore and Warehouse Workers Union, told the audience that he thought there was a class war between workers, corporations, and the extremely wealthy. Edmonton Strathcona MP Heather McPherson did not back down from her controversial comments about the NDP needing to end so-called purity tests. McPherson talked about her family background as a metaphor for growing the party and bringing more voices to the table. Farmer Tony McQuail was the only candidate to talk about AI and said that it posed a great threat to Canadian workers. McQuail expressed his hope that the NDP could grow its support by welcoming members of other parties like the Greens. And finally, Tennille Johnston, the only Indigenous candidate in the race, said that she would like to see the party reduce barriers to membership by offering free memberships to all those who wanted to join. The first debate of the leadership race has been scheduled for November 27th in Montreal and will be conducted entirely in French. Also in federal politics this week, in a column on Rabble, Linda McQuaig argues that Prime Minister Mark Carney's planned increase to military spending will not only be wasteful, it will weaken Canada's national defense. Mark Carney plans to increase the percentage of the national GDP that Canada spends on its military from less than 2% to 5%. This would mean that Canada is spending a larger percentage of its GDP on its military than the U.S. McQuaig said tying military spending to GDP is wasteful because it is arbitrary and does not take into account actual military needs. Furthermore, spending money on weapon systems built by the U.S., like the F-35 jet, could leave Canada vulnerable at a time of unstable relations with the superpower to our south. In labor news this week, a new report is showing that wage increases this year will likely be smaller than in previous years. This is the third year in a row where wage increases have grown by a smaller percentage than in previous years. According to the Canadian Labor Congress, this slow growth in worker wages is down to a shrinking job market, uncertainty around the federal budget, and Donald Trump's tariffs on Canadian goods. Chris Roberts, economic policy director at the Canadian Labor Congress, says that slower wage growth raises concerns that wages may not keep pace with rising inflation, meaning fewer dollars in Canadians' pockets. And finally, in health news, the Alberta government was accused this week of leaving Alberta vulnerable to a flu or COVID-19 epidemic. The government had initially quietly posted a notice on its website that all COVID-19 or flu vaccinations that residents of the province hope to receive next year had to be booked by the middle of this December. This left the public with the impression that the government was trying to limit the number of people who receive these vaccinations. One Alberta doctor, Dr. David Keegan, took to social media to say that this decision by the province would put lives at risk. Later in the week, the government issued a so-called clarification saying that those who wanted a flu or COVID-19 shot next year could still order them after the December deadline. And as always, you can read about all the stories we talked about today on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
from Burnaby.
Hi, I'm Andre.